On the show today, we have LexisNexis' very own Kim Sutherland talking about the company's risk solutions cybercrime reports. Really helpful information in here, so check it out. Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we're talking a little cybercrime with Kim Sutherland from LexisNexis. Kim, how are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great, all things considered. But we're all hanging in there the best we can. So, but we're talking about, you guys have this LexisNexis Risk Solutions Cybercrime Report that you guys do. How often do you guys put this out? Is it like a monthly thing or?
No, so because we try to track so many transactions to give a robust set of results, we produce this twice a year.
Oh, okay.
There are different versions. So we have a global report that we do twice a year. Then sometimes we do different takes in regions.
Okay.
So we might do one for the Asia Pacific region or for, you know, Europe. Even we have a Canadian cut that we gave this year as well.
Okay.
So twice a year is what a customer should expect.
Gotcha. Because this really sounds quite fun. I think we've done a story on this before. Maybe it was 6 months ago that we did it with you guys. So anyway, so let's get caught up here. So what does, so the latest cybercrime report that you guys put out, and it really lists, it actually kind of focuses on what we're experiencing right now with the COVID-19 crisis. And so what does the dramatic consumer changes that we've all have experienced the last 6 weeks or so, what does it mean for businesses and consumer? And then we'll get into the whole cybercrime side of it.
Yeah, so one thing that we definitely realized is that when social distancing started, that meant that we were operating from in our homes instead of going to the businesses that we typically work with.
Yep.
So as you can imagine, we saw across every type of a company a dramatic increase in digital transactions. So all of us started working, you know, going to the websites, using mobile apps. And that is a trend that we have seen year over year. I think that digital transformation just happened a lot faster for some industries than they had planned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think everything that was, because I remember talking to a number of credit unions and they're all saying, yeah, we're on this digital transformation journey. It's a marathon. And all of a sudden this thing hit and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, it became the 100-yard dash, you know? So it's
That's
a
right.
sprint.
and for those companies that had already gone down that path slowly, they had already identified that the processes they had in place, maybe for in-person, didn't automatically translate.
Yeah.
And so now the goal is to try to help companies that have maybe been a little later in the adoption of digital transformation to try to catch up on addressing those fraud risks that they're encountering now. This is very early, like you said, only 6 weeks into the process. So many of those fraud trends are not yet seen. But when we do a look back months from now, we're going to see a lot of challenges. So we like to try to help ramp people up to understand what it is like to actually transact online more.
Yes, I've heard the term that we're building the plane as we're taking off. So I've heard that term time and time again with this type of stuff. So I'm glad you brought the whole fraudsters thing, because according to this report, they don't seem to have a playbook during this time. It seems like there's something different every week. So can you explain what's going on here?
Yeah, so I would say in general, fraudsters never really have a playbook. But we have seen now more and more professional fraudsters, people who aren't just, you know, one individual trying to take advantage of a loophole, but someone who's made a complete business around doing it. So one thing that we've always been able to track, and just to give you a little context, we look at about 35 billion transactions a year. Yeah. In the cybercrime report that we produced, the last version, we had about 19 billion transactions. So, I mean, we're looking at a really broad view of transactions across multiple industries and multiple regions, because one thing that we've identified is that fraudsters are not static, right? They might one day be working to try to penetrate a financial institution, mm-hmm. and the next day a media company,
okay.
or a telco. And so we look at fraud transactions and how they are interacting across industry and across regions. So now fraudsters don't have to just stay in the U.S. They can spend a little time over in the U.K. and then go over into Asia. And especially since we're all remote, you can just go everywhere.
Exactly.
So our biggest thing that we see is that fraud is global, mm-hmm. and fraud is connected. And to try to really address fraud, you really do need to have a network approach, a very interconnected way of looking at fraud signals.
Yes, they're very cosmopolitan in a cyber sense, for sure, for sure. So, well, what you just said there, I mean, so what is the best defense against these folks? Because since there's no real pattern to what they're doing or anything, what is the best defense? How can credit unions and then credit unions pass it on to their members or just, or anybody for that matter, consumers, what's the best defense against these folks?
Yeah, we've been really working with our customers to develop a multi-layered approach. The more signals that they can get, the better. To look at the consumer, not just from a physical identity standpoint, which has been, I think, the most common way of looking at things, you know, where do you live? So what's your address? What's your date of birth? Your social security number, your name. Now you also have to pay a lot more attention to the digital footprint of your customers. Mm-hmm. And so that's also understanding the devices that they use, the IP addresses that they're coming in from, their email address, their phone numbers. All of those things are additional risk signals that help you identify your good customers and let them transact on your sites faster, and then also try to prevent the bad consumers. And the one thing that we saw as for the first time, we've talked a lot about the benefit of using a mobile app. Mobile applications, you can embed a lot more security into the process. And so sometimes consumers have been a little bit hesitant to want to download a mobile app if they're not sure how often they're going to transact with the company.
Right.
So, but we've always said mobile apps are definitely the best approach.
Okay.
This time we actually saw increased fraud attacks, even within mobile apps. So I think that there is no magic bullet, whether people are transacting with mobile apps or transacting via mobile browser. Every type of remote transaction does have some level of risk. Mm-hmm. So the best approach is multiple layers of defense, using strong authentication where appropriate, and just really trying to take advantage of the risk signals that companies can use passively, because no one wants to negatively impact the customer experience either. And there's a lot of ways, you know, you can prevent fraud and not negatively impact your customer experience.
Yeah, there's definitely a fine line or a balancing act with the convenience and the security, for sure, because you don't want to go overboard on either side. So yeah, I think we're all trying to find that sweet spot, for sure, for sure. What's that?
So that's right.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And so I want to go over a couple of the highlights here and in the report. One of the ones that stood out to me is that mobile attacks now outnumber desktop attacks. I think we all saw that one coming, but not quite this soon. It sounds so. You want to expand on that one a little bit?
Yeah. So desktops, we've always seen there to be much more. Even though we've seen an increase or more people using their mobile devices to access a company, we've always seen there to be higher rates of fraud in desktop scenarios because, again, they're using the browser versus an app.
Right.
But we actually saw a significant increase this time. And so now we're paying close attention to those risks that occur regardless if you're on a desktop or a mobile device and whether you're using the mobile app or a mobile browser. So again, no area is immune to fraud.
Right, exactly. Yeah, nothing's 100% for sure. The other one that kind of stuck out for me was e-commerce industry sees a significant increase in the payment attack rate. So I think that kind of is indicative of our current situation. We're all kind of stuck at home and going through Instacart and Amazon and things like that. Is that kind of what you're seeing as well?
Absolutely. So payment transactions and new account opening transactions are areas that, for example, we had not previously seen as many automated scripted attacks like bot attacks. Mm-hmm. And we usually saw them more at login. Now we're seeing many more attacks occurring during payment transactions and during new account openings.
Okay. Yeah, and talk to me about bots, because we've all heard bots and stuff, but it's still new to a lot of people, especially probably in the credit union industry, who are just now getting into it. And we're not talking like chat bots. We're talking about these little tiny, program bots and that are making things, I mean, they're making life a lot easier for a lot of folks, for sure. But on the other side of it, they could make life pretty miserable. So can you tell us about the bots that are going on out there?
So I just think of bots as automated scripting, right? So a programmed approach, instead of just having one individual constantly trying to execute a process, whether it be good or bad.
Yeah.
Now we have a world of bots where we're often trying to tell, is it a human or a non-human yeah. that's transacting with that business?
Yeah.
And so when it comes to the non-humans, there are good and bad bots. A good bot, like you said, makes processes much more efficient. Many of our customers that are trying to deal with manual review of their fraud queues, they're trying to figure out how do they have these more automated approaches. That's a good scenario. Mm-hmm. Bad bots are penetrating, you know, hard, trying to find those vulnerabilities. And again, they have been focused more on account takeover. So trying to take over, maybe guessing those really weak passwords, or seeing where there are lapses in authentication in general. Now we're seeing, because of the data breaches that have occurred over time, the looseness and of sharing personal information, now bot attacks are happening at new account opening, right? They've been able to amass enough information to be able to now try to pretend that they're a human mm-hmm. at the time that they're opening an account. Or making that payment transaction. So, I mean, I think that it's important to pay attention to your good and bad customers, but also to understand when you're dealing with a human-initiated attack or a non-human attack.
Yeah, the bots are definitely a double-edged sword. And I like the way you put it. Those bad bots, they get under your skin for sure. Oh my gosh, cool stuff. What else do we need to know here in our current situation? Even as we're starting to recover, people are starting to kind of come out and get on with their lives as normal as possible. But what else should we know about the fraudster, kind of the fraudster era we're in right now that nobody's really talking about right now that you guys know about?
Well, I mean, I think that it's just very early to identify what those fraud trends are specific to, you know, the last 6 weeks of our lives. Everybody's trying to dig in and understand. What we do know for sure is yeah. that the volume of digital transactions has increased. And another interesting thing is that we're seeing a lot, you know, again, we see 35 billion transactions. So, you know, we see a lot of devices, but we're seeing a lot more devices that we've never seen before.
Oh, really?
And a lot of that is because behavior has shifted. Mm-hmm. I rarely, if ever, checked my bank account or ordered something via one of my e-commerce companies that I work with on my desktop, because I was never home to be in my home office.
Yeah.
Now we're starting to see new devices that maybe we've never seen before within our network. And those look risky, you know, the first time that a business may see it. Mm-hmm. But because you can look at so many different signals, we don't want to increase false positives. So I think it's just really important for companies not just to focus on one thing. Maybe you haven't seen the device, but everything else associated with that, that digital footprint is something that's known. And we start to dissect that it's okay that Kim is now using her desktop to access her bank account right. because everything else still kind of, you know, comes together well. She's using the same email address, the same username, the same approaches that she prefers with passwords. And one thing that we've been putting a lot of focus on is behavioral biometrics.
Mm-hmm. I heard that
so
too.
It's not just the device that you use or your email address that you use, but it's how you interact with mm-hmm. that device.
Yeah.
And so we're focusing a lot more on the importance of being able to take those signals on how a consumer interacts with a device mm-hmm. that gives you insights on, again, if it's a bot or not. You know, there are certain activities that fraudsters do that's very different than a good consumer. Mm-hmm. And in general, there are always going to be more good customers than there are bad. So you don't want to have processes where you are negatively impacting your good customers.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, Kim, this is so fascinating, especially the whole behavior thing. I'm finding that's really starting to come to the surface now. And I just find that whole process so fascinating. And it's just going to get more and more prevalent as time goes on, right?
That's right. So things like, you know, cutting and pasting of information. There are observations that we see that, you know, you probably hardly ever would cut and paste your phone number, right? You know your phone number by
yeah.
heart.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at a list of identities that you've compromised, you might, a fraudster might cut and paste that information. How long you stay on screen. If you have frequented that site, you know, 50 times because you are trying to go through a number of credentials,
mm-hmm.
You probably navigate much faster than the legitimate consumer mm-hmm. who's never seen that new account opening page before and is having to think through, okay, what do they want in this field?
Yeah.
So just looking at things like time on page, how people are inputting information, whether or not they start on a certain screen than that's normal. I mean, I think that looking at that anomalous behavior is really important, and that's what behavioral biometrics brings to light while doing it in a very passive nature. So, it doesn't add additional friction into the process.
Yeah, and just a real quick question off the top of my head. What about autofill? Does it catch things like, because, I mean, a lot of people just autofill. It's like, oh, you put your name in, and then it fills everything out. Does that have any bearing on whether it's you or a bot? Can that be discerned?
So autofill is different, and autofill is definitely not necessarily a bad thing at all. I mean, I think that everyone should be careful on what they have, they're using autofill for. Mm-hmm. But behavioral biometrics can discern the difference between autofill and cutting and pasting.
Okay, cool.
Or even using a password manager.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So all of those are acceptable behaviors. And I think it's really important to think of it from the aspect that these are all machine learning models that are quickly adapting and trying to look at behaviors and start to make patterns out of them.
Fantastic. Oh my gosh, Kim, this is so cool. I love this stuff. All right. I know you got a lot on your plate, so I'm going to let you get going. But one last question for you. Where can folks find out more details on some of these? Because I think we only scratched the surface here. So where can they find out?
I highly recommend downloading the Cybercrime Report at LexisNexisRiskSolutions.com. The Cybercrime Report itself is available for the July to December of 2019.
Okay.
So it was, so we always have a look back so we can have all of that data.
Okay.
We'll have our next version that's January to June. And we're trying to determine if there's going to be a need to have one that's an interim one. So we're just trying to monitor those trends. But you can also get access to any of the historical reports, because sometimes it's good to look at some of the longitudinal aspects mm-hmm. of the report as well.
Indeed. Good stuff. All right, Kim, thank you so much for this. This is fantastic information. Thank you so much. I love it. I love it. So yeah, appreciate it. We'll put all that link in the, we'll put the link in the show notes so people can get right to it and get all the details that they need. Cause again, I think this is just the tip of the iceberg for sure. So
absolutely.
Good stuff. Thanks again. Appreciate the time. I'm exhausted.
It can be easy though. It can be easy.
It is. All right, Kim. Thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.